What this case is really about is not health care, it's not Obamacare, it's whether the President of the United States is in fact the President of the United States and subject to the Constitution, or an autocrat who can impose taxes on his own.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV. Today we're talking with Michael Cannon. He's Director of Health Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. He was one of the architects of the arguments that won big in one court case about Obamacare and subsidies and lost in another case. So we're going to talk to him about that. Michael, thanks for talking to
thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, just recently we had a three-person panel of the D.C. Circuit Court say that the IRS or the government can't disburse health care subsidies for Obamacare through the federal health care exchanges. We also had a Fourth Circuit Court say, no, that it can. How do you feel about these outcomes?
Well, it's really interesting. You've got one court, the D.C. Circuit, which is really the second highest court in the land, saying that the president has been issuing illegal subsidies in 36 states. We're talking about a lot of money, tens of billions of dollars.
That's 36 states because that's how many states use the federal
did not
exchange.
Establish their
right.
own exchange,
right.
So they don't have an exchange established by the state, which is what the law requires right. for those
and,
subsidies
and that's
to flow.
The law specifically, explicitly says the subsidies go through state-run
Yeah, that's the language in the statute. It has to be an exchange established by the state. So what the D.C. Circuit has ruled is that the president did not have the authority to issue those tens of billions of dollars of subsidies to the 5 million people who are receiving them in the 36 states with federal exchanges. Those subsidies are illegal, and the penalties that go along with those subsidies, which affect maybe 10 times as many people, more than 50 million, are also illegal. And you also had the Fourth Circuit saying, no, they weren't, they were legal.
Right.
So this is a pretty glaring difference.
Put a point on the amount, how important the subsidies are to the exchanges and to Obamacare in the individual market. 86% of people receive subsidies, and the subsidies on average come to about 75% of the cost of the premium. So this is not an incidental part of the program.
That's right. What these subsidies exist to do is to shift from the premium payer to the taxpayer much or all of the cost of the very expensive health insurance that Obamacare requires
right.
people to purchase. This is why the president rewrote the law, because if he implemented the law as written, then in two-thirds of the country, people would be facing the full cost of his health insurance program, and the backlash would convince even Democratic members of Congress to reopen the law.
So here's a question. I mean, what happens next? The D.C. Circuit, it was a three-person panel. Are they going to have an on-bank hearing? And the Fourth Circuit, was that a full?
That was also a three-panel.
Okay, so are they going to skip all of this and go directly to the Supreme Court? Because that seems to be where this is headed.
Well, no one knows exactly what is going to happen, except the Obama administration, which lost in the D.C. Circuit, said that it will ask for en banc review.
Right.
The plaintiffs.
And that means the whole court, all of the judges will say
13,
yes or
there'll
no.
There will be 13 yeah. judges that then review that three-judge panel's ruling. In the Fourth Circuit, the plaintiffs could ask for en banc review, or they could ask the Supreme Court to review the ruling, because right now we have a circuit split. The Obama administration is asking for en banc review in the D.C. Circuit because they're hoping that they will overturn that panel decision and eliminate the split.
What is the likelihood of that?
I don't really know. What most people say is the 13 judges that would sit on that en banc panel are comprised of 8 Democratic appointees and 5 Republican appointees. So everyone assumes that they will vote the Democratic way,
right.
And therefore the panel
Obama
rule
way, yeah.
will be overturned. I'm not so sure. I think that's too simplistic.
Let me follow up with a couple of questions. I mean, because this is the unfolding of the resistance to Obamacare after it lost in the big individual mandate case and whatnot. What do you think the Supreme Court would do? Is there any reason, assuming this goes to the Supreme Court, is there any reason to believe that the same Supreme Court that rewrote Obamacare in order to make the individual mandate stand, constitutional muster, that it would actually at this point say, you know what, this is the straw that breaks the camel's back, and you know, we're actually going to enforce the law as it was written?
Well, I like to think that the Supreme Court doesn't say, all right, we've cut Obamacare enough slack. I like to think that they look at the legal issues involved. And so on the one hand, you have people saying, well, John Roberts didn't want to disrupt Obamacare or bring the court's legitimacy into question, and so he voted to uphold it. So he's going to do the same again. You have other people saying, well, that's given him cover to do to vote against Obamacare. He's already done that in Hobby Lobby.
Right.
John Roberts also said in his ruling in NFIB v. Sebelius that it is not the job of the court to save the American people from their own policy choices. Mm-hmm. And that is actually what the Obama administration was trying to do, to save the American people from the structural flaws in Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And so if you go by that part of John Roberts' ruling, then he you might conclude that he would vote against the government and to uphold, ironically, to uphold the way Obamacare actually works.
Did the government, did the federal government or the drafters of Obamacare really mean to exempt federal exchanges from being able to issue subsidies? Because one of the arguments is that, no, this was a way to incentivize the states in order to get into the game and create their own exchanges. And it seems like everybody expected more states to actually create their own exchanges. Or is this just kind of sloppy craftsmanship?
This was not a drafting error.
Okay.
We can toss that claim out the window. Everyone, from the plaintiffs to the government to the Fourth Circuit that ruled against for the government, the dissent in the D.C. Circuit, they all acknowledge that this was that the meaning of the statute is plain, it is clear. And then they diverge from there about the after they look at the relevant provisions. Not even the Obama administration argues that this is a drafting error. And if you look at the progression,
so then what is their argument? Then it's just that it shouldn't matter in the end.
Well, their argument is, as you mentioned, that Congress intended to offer these subsidies mm-hmm. through federal exchanges. There are a couple problems with that. The statute says exactly the opposite.
Right.
There's nothing in the statute that conflicts with the language that speaks directly to that question. There's no legislative history that says that Congress intended to do that. So what we're talking about here is people using the term congressional intent. But what they mean is that some members of Congress would have liked the law to read another way, would have liked the law to authorize tax credits and federal exchanges, but that's not congressional intent. When you have a bill that says no tax credits and federal exchanges, and you vote to approve that bill, that is Congress's intent.
One of the arguments is, look, we passed a specific law, and we better implement that specific law. And if we don't, then kind of madness starts to creep.
That's
into
why
the
my co-author and I, Jonathan Adler, had a piece in the Wall Street Journal this morning that argues that what this case is really about is not healthcare, it's not Obamacare, it's whether the President of the United States is in fact the President of the United States and subject to the Constitution, or an autocrat who can impose taxes on his own authority.
Talk a little bit about your and Jonathan Adler, who's a law professor at Case Western. You guys are the architect of this line of argument against Obamacare. How did you come up with it? And do you think it is going to, that it's ultimately going to prevail?
Well, I found out about it in an email from Jonathan Adler. He in August of 2011, I think it was, he just happened to casually mention that the law only authorizes subsidies and exchanges established by the state. Now, he wasn't the one who discovered that, but he'd been talking about it for a little bit, and he mentioned it to me, and I was probably the first person who recognized the significance. I had mm-hmm. already been encouraging states not to establish exchanges for various reasons, and this suddenly became the most powerful reason for them to do so. So,
Why is it a powerful reason for them not to? Because actually, I mean, that would mean that their residents don't get reduced priced health insurance.
What it means is that the law gave the states the authority to veto major provisions of its regulatory scheme: the subsidies, the employer mandate, and to a large extent, the individual mandate. A state that does not establish an exchange exempts all of its employers from the employer mandate and lots of its residents from the individual mandate. And by blocking the subsidies, what you're doing is you're not increasing the cost of health insurance at all. What you're doing is revealing to the voters in your state the full cost of Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And if you want to repeal Obamacare, as a lot of people who were elected to the state level in 2010 did, they're elected because of the backlash against this law, then that's an important step for you to take. And a lot of states took that step precisely to veto these provisions.
What is, very quickly, what is your preferred alternative to Obamacare? Because you're not a proponent of the status quo before Obamacare. I mean, that was a world in which government was spending, 40-something cents of every dollar of health care, and things were not going particularly well. What's your preferred alternative to Obamacare as well as the status quo before that?
Well, the problem with American healthcare is that it already looked so much like Obamacare. Mm-hmm. Obamacare and all the other government interventions that came before it are making healthcare more expensive and reducing the quality of care. So if we want to make healthcare better and more affordable, particularly for the people we should be most concerned about, the poor, the sick, what we need to do is we need to be generating innovations that reduce the cost of healthcare, not shift it to taxpayers, but actually reduce the cost of healthcare.
And this is innovation both in terms of delivery of healthcare, but also technology, new types of ways of dealing with
things. Absolutely, all these kinds of innovations that have been suppressed by government licensing of clinicians, by the tax preference for employer-sponsored insurance, by Medicare, by Medicaid, by certificate of need laws, where you have to get permission from the government to enter the healthcare market, and now by Obamacare. If you sweep those things away, certainly we're not going to have a healthcare sector where absolutely every human need is met, but we are going to do a better job of preventing people from falling through the cracks than we would do under any other alternative system, because that's what innovation does. It fills in those cracks so that fewer people fall through. And if you I've been asked this question a lot since Hallbig came out. You know, what would you do? We've got a paper at the Cato Institute. I released it in 2009 during the Obamacare debate. It's still fresh because we still need to make all these changes. It's called Yes, Mr. President, A Free Market Can Fix Healthcare. And if they go to the Cato website, they can read about all the changes that are.
All right. We will leave it there. Thank you, Michael Cannon. We've been talking with Michael Cannon. He's Director of Health Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie.